Hey friends, got a fun show for you today with two women who are right now navigating their way from Tahoe to Southern California in the Rebel Rally, the first ever all-women's off-road navigation rally in the U.S. Stoked to have them. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please consider supporting the production by checking out our website where you can find some cool stickers as well as a hat that you can slap your Velcro-backed patches on. Your support means a lot. If you stick around to the end, you'll hear me incorrectly give out the Instagram IDs of my guests, as usual. Check the show notes or at All Terrain Podcast on Instagram for the links. All right, here's episode 8.
And then we also have a safe word to, like, you know, if one of us gets to that point, we're like, okay, just give me a minute.
Which it might be the ejector seat switch.
It might
this
be
year.
The ejector seat switch.
Car come all the way off the ground.
So we were supposed to be in a parking lot in an RV with Michelle Davis and Andrea Schaefer, the Sugar High Motorsports team competing in the 2017 Rebel Rally, which starts Thursday, right?
Yes.
It's a women's off-road navigation rally that runs from Lake Tahoe to Southern California. Unfortunately, we're in the studio here in Reno because the RV had...
some transmission issues.
Old RV syndrome.
It's an old RV. It's seen better days.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for coming in and chatting with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Michelle, you're from Montana.
Yes.
And you and your husband do Sugar High Motorsports. And Andrea, you're from Las Vegas.
Correct.
And your husband was on... Episode two.
I think it was
Michael,
two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I hinted, I promised then that we would have you on now, and here you are.
Here I am.
So let's tell me a little bit about Sugar High Motorsports. What is that? What are you guys?
Okay. Well, it kind of incorporates our hobbies. My husband's actually in the detailing world, I guess. He was a detailer and kind of created a product. So we have a detailer's helper is what it's called. It's a retail product in the detailing world. But his true hobby, though, is building cars. He likes hot rods and such. And so he's done that since he was a teenager. And just in the last couple of years, I decided I wanted to join him out in the shop. Our kids, I was a stay-at-home mom. Our kids got older, left the house. And so I decided to join him out there. And I told him I wanted to start learning. But I'm more of a Jeep off-road type interest than the hot rods like he did. So he was like, well, let's take on your first project. Let's do a Jeep. And so that kind of started everything and ended up doing this Rebel Rally. And then I've ended up with some other things that have come along the way. And so we just decided to kind of incorporate both of our hobbies, including all his hot rod hobby and what we do with that. And we just sort of, it became Sugar High Motorsports, and it kind of incorporates anything we do, whether it be building or doing his hot rod stuff or doing the off-road things, and just kind of a fun side thing.
Cool. Awesome. Now, how did you get hooked up with this? Are you guys like college buddies?
No.
Pen pals? So Facebook friends.
We actually met about July of last year before the rally, and we met in a Facebook group of people looking for teammates for the Rebel last year. And I had talked to a couple people, and she had talked to a couple people, and we were just both looking for teammates, and then we met up, and it was a perfect fit.
Cool.
Yeah.
So tell me quickly about just sort of a general overview of what the rally is and what it involves, and don't get too detailed because we'll hopefully dig into all that stuff as we go through.
Okay, so the Rebel Rally is a all-female 2,000-kilometer map and compass navigation rally.
Okay.
And it starts in San Diego. Or it starts in Tahoe and ends in San Diego.
And so you start in Tahoe and they say you have to find something.
So each morning we are given a road book of things that we need, like checkpoints to find, and it's either a latitude and a longitude or it's a distance and a heading, and we have to plot the checkpoints and then we have to figure out how to get to those checkpoints. And then ultimately at the end of the rally, the person or the team with the most checkpoints
wins. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not like a race rally. It's for points.
Okay.
Each checkpoint has different points values.
And so then Is it the kind of thing where you might go to a checkpoint and not be entirely sure that it's that?
Yes. It? So there's three different types of checkpoints. There's green checkpoints, which are flagged and have a staff member. And then there's blue checkpoints, which are marked with like a little PVC pipe that's painted blue or a blue flag. Not necessarily a person, but it's there. And then there's black checkpoints, which have absolutely nothing. So you're just going off of...
You're just hoping you got it right.
You're hoping you got it right based on your, you know, your math and your calculations. Uh-huh. And your, you know, you can take headings off of mountains to figure out where you are and triangulate. And yeah.
So this is your second Rebel Rally. How'd the first one go?
Well, the first one was a little
The first 3 days were great.
Yeah, the first 3 days were great. And then we decided to fly off a sand dune. And that's not really great on a Jeep. So we had a little crash that ended up... fortunately, we were able to continue each day. It was one of those things we just kept praying each day that the next day we'd be able to start again. And the mechanics were awesome. They got us... basically, they were trail-type fixes. So it was just enough to get us going the next day. And then by the end of the day, after beating it, you know, off-road all day, it was usually kind of at that point again where we're like, okay, do you think we're going to be able to make it tomorrow? And our whole goal became, let's just finish this thing. And we did. And we, you know, it was challenging, but it was also incredible. I think it really brought Andrea and I together and, you know, it just...
And us with the mechanics.
Right. Yes. Oh, yes.
We got to be really good friends with the mechanics.
We nicknamed them the Sugar High Pit Crew.
There's a rule with the rally that if your vehicle is with the mechanics, one of the teammates has to be with it also. Mm. So when they were working on it at 2 a.m, we were there also.
Oh, okay.
Because you can't leave it with them.
So we there was more behind the story of going off a sand dune. Didn't something unusual happen? I thought you guys rolled the Jeep over.
No, we didn't roll it.
Oh no, we didn't roll it, huh? Okay. No,
we just
thank
flew
goodness,
off.
But...
We just flew off the dune and landed nose first.
I thought you guys with maybe that was somebody else from Rebel Rally in a blue Jeep. No, but we
nosedived it. It broke out the front axle. The back shocks came up through the floorboards. It broke out the whole back window, and just you know everything was kind of misaligned.
Maybe it just looked like it had rolled
over. Yeah, it was a little rough. Yeah, it was.
It had a tarp covering the back window after that. Held on by.
Yeah, we had glass everywhere.
but we finished.
Yeah. We were, it was actually really cool though. You know, even all the other girls in the rally really just surrounded us and it became a thing each day. They were just like, you know what, if you guys can't move, we are all going to strap to you and we're going to tow you over that finish line.
Yeah.
So you generally camp in the same spot?
No. So there's several base camps. So we are responsible for setting up our own tents and sleeping bags and then breaking it down in the morning as well. So at the end of each day, we have navigated to one of four base camps. And then one night there's a self-camp night. So,
okay, cool.
So we're in we're with all the other.
Yeah, they have a special area where we all set up our tents and we all camp. But then they have one big tent that they feed us. They feed us phenomenal food, actually, which is really nice.
It's really refreshing.
That's also where we have like the meeting for the general meeting for the morning for everyone. And we can do in the meetings are in the mornings when we get our maps and stuff. We can start plotting on the tables and things like that.
And the vehicles are all in impound.
Yes.
Oh, so you can't go mess with them unless
right.
they're being
worked
on.
We're given an hour. When we check in, when we get back to base camp, we are given an hour to get all of our stuff out of the vehicle before we have to turn our keys over.
Huh. All right. Well, let's get into the question. You guys know the format here. You know the format.
I know the format.
So the format we have, we've been asking everybody the same 11 questions.
Okay.
And
I remember one of them for sure.
Yeah, I remember one of them for sure.
My question is, are we answering these about the rally or are we answering these about personal life?
Let's answer about the rally. Let's talk about the rally.
Okay. All right. We can do that.
So the first question is, who's in your overland crew? And I think we've already touched on that.
Each other.
Yeah.
You're in the crew.
It's just us.
Yep.
So what, I guess you guys take turns driving, navigating, or?
Our original plan was to before the rally last year.
Right.
And it's Michelle's Jeep. So I told her day one, I was like, all right, you're driving for sure day one. But our plan was to just kind of see how it goes. And if one of us got tired driving, we could take turns navigating and, you know, just to give each other a break. And then day two, I was like, why don't you drive again? And then day three, I was like, I really just like navigating. And she's like, well, I really like driving. And then we just stayed there.
And then we had the crash. And then she's like, you know what? I would have felt so bad if I had crashed your Jeep. And so it just, yeah. And she, when we found out too, by doing that, you really hone in on your skills better. You know, right. She's able to really focus on her navigating. I'm able to focus on not flying off sand dunes this year.
Yeah. Did you bookmark that place that like put a location there so that you can make sure that you don't?
We actually have rings with the coordinates on them of where we landed.
That's awesome.
Yes. And what on the inside? So Andrea got these for us. On the outside's engraved the coordinates, and then on the inside, what is it, Andrea?
It says just keep swimming, because that was our slogan after we crashed. Mm-hmm. And then it has the ichthus, and then it has Team Sugar High.
Cool.
Yeah.
And where was this that crash location?
It was in Dumont Dunes.
Mm-hmm. Dumont Dunes. I don't know where that is.
Look it up.
I will look it up.
I can give you the coordinates. Do you want them?
Yeah.
I don't know if my eyes are that good.
You might want to go pick up all that glass that's still laying there.
There might still be some there.
It's probably turned into sand by now.
That's probably true.
All right. So second question, what's your overlanding vehicle?
It's a Jeep 04 TJ, although we don't call it a TJ anymore. We call it an SHJ, Sugar High J, because there are really only about 5 parts left on it that are still original. We've kind of stripped the whole thing and put all new parts on it.
Wow.
So with, you know, like I said, it started out as just a project Jeep for me to start learning on. And then once the Rebel happened, and then we got sponsors came on board, and then it was going to be in SEMA. And so the next thing we knew, it just kind of exploded, and it's going to be in SEMA again this year as well.
Right.
So we've kind of replaced some of the other parts with our new sponsors parts. And so it's been fun. It's been great for my husband and I to learn to work together, and I've learned a lot on it.
So what's been the sort of the motive behind the build? I mean, it's, I'll get some, you know, we'll post some pictures, but it's a Jeep. It's it doesn't necessarily look like a overlander per se, or certainly not a rock crawler. I mean, what's sort of the niche that you've gone? Because it's lifted, but not much. It's got big tires, but they're not gigantic.
Her teammate is short. She couldn't lift it too much.
Well, and there's also requirements for the rally.
Okay.
There's parameters you have to stay within as far as how large your wheels can be, as far as how much of a lift you can have, things like that. So we stayed within those parameters to make sure we would qualify for that. And also, I mean, I do use it as a daily vehicle at home too. So it's kind of one of those vehicles that had to be good for multiple different purposes. Mm-hmm. So it's not really extreme on any of them.
Right. It looks pretty capable from what I can tell.
So far, yeah. Hopefully, hopefully it'll be good for us during the rally again.
It will be.
Yes.
Awesome. Have you done any like modifications for comfort, power, or just like rock crawling?
No, it's got all sorts. In fact, the thing I love the most that happened this year is I have a whole new dash that my husband created. We had a fire in it as well.
Oh, no.
Yes, in the spring we were towing it back from a training, and you know, we've towed this thing thousands of miles, and for whatever reason on this one incident, it must have somehow slipped, just engaged just slightly into gear, and we were pulling it behind a motorhome, did not realize. It heated up, caught the wires on fire, and
wow.
Yeah, the whole dash burnt up. And that was one of the few things that, after all the modifications we had done last year, that I didn't really like. It still had the plastic OEM dash.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways it was like, it was difficult, but there was the silver lining
that,
oh, cool, now I can get an awesome dash.
Right.
And it's really awesome.
Yeah.
Except for there's one button that's not my favorite. But.
We have a panel. So it's got all sorts of switches on it, almost like an airplane, you know, for all the different things. So when we got the cluster for all the switches, there was one extra one that we didn't need. And so my husband, being funny, he said, why don't we make that the ejector seat? So it says ejector seat. And then when you flip it, we've got the sound that would happen in an airplane when it would eject, the warning sounds go off. So I tell Andrea, if she annoys me during the rally, I'm going to hit the ejector seat.
Except for the thing she doesn't know is her husband sits where I sit, so maybe he wired it to the driver's seat.
Yeah.
She just doesn't know that.
Yeah. Let's just not find
out.
Sounds
like maybe you should wire it to both seats in case you go off another sand dune.
Oh, there you go.
We're not going to.
Yeah, that's done. One and done.
Yeah. All right. So for the Rebel Rally, how do you guys carry gear for like all your camping gear and equipment and stuff?
It all has to be in the Jeep. Mm-hmm. We have to take everything with us.
So all of your tents and sleeping bags
tent,
and stuff?
Yeah, so we share a tent. Some teams do, some teams don't. We share a tent, but all of our sleeping bags and gear and clothes and Maxtrax
and tools and spare
Yeah,
parts.
We have to have our own tools, our own spare parts, our own fluids, our own...
We have to have a survival kit, spill kit, whip.
Snacks.
So, yeah, snacks. But, yes. I mean, fortunately, like I said, the rally does provide our meals for us, so we don't have to worry about carrying a bunch of food other than snacks. But, you know, being in a two-door Jeep, we don't have a lot of space, so we're pretty crammed in there. Yeah. Fortunately, Andrea's short and little, so
I saw you had you have a roof rack and you have some gear up on the roof rack. Because everything else just go in the back?
The Max Trax go on the roof, and pretty much everything else was inside. I think
got a big shovel up there. But everything else is inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have like drawers or boxes or anything fancy stuck in there?
No, nothing built in. We just we've got everything in large duffel bags. We put them in big plastic bins last year, but we found that the duffel bags, you know, compact more with it. So we got some nice
and also tubs crack and break open when you crash.
They're super junky.
Especially
the clear ones.
So those busted when we crashed, and
our fluids went everywhere. And it was
we
messy,
learned that. But so this year we learned some lessons and put things in bags and versus tote.
Because it's a short Jeep, a two-door Jeep, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And we also, so where we have to park the vehicle to where we sleep, we have to walk all of our gear over.
Okay.
So last year with the totes, it was a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Do you guys go like pretty lightweight? I mean, you're not in a giant canvas tent, I would imagine.
No, we actually have a new tent this year. Well, we had a small one last year, too. Yeah. It was fine. But we got a new one that's supposed to be I think it's called the two-second tent or something. And although, after a lot of practice, maybe we'll get it down to 2 seconds. But it's one of those that I think takes a lot of practice the first several times.
I bet by night four or five, we have it figured out.
Yeah. But it's really just supposed to pop up.
Like
you
those,
know,
what's like the hoops? Like
Yes.
We had one of those little, like a little kid tent for the babies to take a nap in.
Oh,
it was exactly like those tents, but it was like that big.
Little mini size.
Like we get like two naps out of that $300 baby tent.
That's what baby gear is. You get like two or three things out of it. You spend way too much money on it.
But we do have to, you know, be conservative with packing because we are on, the rally's 10 days, 7 days of competition. So, you know, we have to pack for about 9 days, basically. And so, you know, you kind of have to limit what you're bringing and be conservative with, you know, rewearing some of your clothes and things like that.
You don't get a wash in there, a laundry break?
No laundry break. You don't notice by the end of it, though.
Right.
Yeah.
So the next question is, where do you sleep? You said tent. Throw out tent. Tell me more about what brand of the tent is it?
Oh, gosh.
Can you pronounce it?
It starts with a Q.
Kusha?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Quechua or something?
Quechua.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Quechua, yeah. And it's actually a really nice tent. And I've been practicing with that at home, so I've gotten it down pretty good. It just takes a little practice, but
I have not practiced. But we each have our own like sleeping pads and sleeping bags and
what sleeping pads do you guys like?
I have a Therm-a-Rest.
We both have Therm-a-Rest. Yeah.
Like just a regular single one or like a Dreamtime or Backpacker.
Hers is light. The Therm-a-Rest light.
Mm-hmm.
Light.
I wanted to make sure that mine like was one of those self-inflating ones because we didn't, you know, we obviously can't hook it to power to like inflate an air mattress or anything. So,
Yeah, they're pretty thin. They roll up really tiny, you know, so they don't take a lot of room.
Size is a big thing that we have to deal with.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a Jeep. For sure. I used to have a CJ7 when I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
It's impossible to fit, like go camping in one of those things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You can't take much.
You get a cooler. You get a cooler with a reasonable amount of beer, and that's can't take anything else.
Thankfully, we don't have a cooler, or we don't have to take a cooler or anything like that.
Right.
So.
We have to have 5 gallons of water at all times, so we keep that in there too. But.
So tell me about the food situation.
It's awesome. They have hired a 5-star chef named Drew Deckman, he cooks all of our meals for us. And then each day we're given like a sack lunch that we take with us out for the day, and then breakfast and dinner is made for us.
And then when we have one self-camp night, and then they send us with MREs on that night. So that makes you really appreciate the food the rest of the time.
Well, if you really had high standards, you could probably survive one night without dinner, right?
No. Well, we get cranky.
Yeah, hangry is not a
good place
to be.
I have to navigate the next day. You don't want me to not have eaten.
All right.
But it's awesome.
So tell me, like what's the most memorable meal that came out?
Oh, my goodness.
The main one I can remember was our final one. And it was after everybody finished the rally, and he cooked steaks and potatoes. And, I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had tacos, and I mean, it was just something different every night, and it was just like, so good. Like, I couldn't wait to get back.
I
kind of felt guilty actually with how good it was, because it's like, well, and we're even
breakfasts
desert.
Were yeah. like was like a chorizo egg bake, or right. there was like yeah. I mean, it's not like you're eating a bowl of cereal with milk, you know. It was
it was good stuff.
Well, when you
and
camp,
he has
like,
options, so like oh, wow. so if yeah. you walk up for like one of the nights was taco night, it was like mm-hmm. okay, you can have chicken, or you can have beef, or you can have vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Like there was like. It wasn't just like, this is what you get. It was like, okay, and if you don't want this side, tell me you don't want it. So we're not wasting it or whatever. You wow. know, it was pretty incredible.
That's impressive.
I'm looking forward to the food again.
Me too.
And maybe enjoying it more this year.
Yeah. We got very little sleep last year because of the whole incident. So that's, I think, one of our goals for this year is just to get some more sleep so we can be more alert to what's actually right. happening throughout.
Right. And maybe eat at the tables and not at the mechanics.
Yeah.
We had to eat some meals at the mechanics.
Oh, really?
Because we had to be with the vehicle, yeah.
It was like not donut. Did you get the same food when you're eating at the mechanics?
We would go get our food from them, and then we'd have to walk it over to like where the mechanics were so we could stay with the vehicle.
Cool.
Yeah, we definitely get spoiled as far as food is concerned.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Awesome. So we're at your favorite question now.
Okay, I'm ready.
So
I got a good answer for the rally for this.
So where do you poop?
For the rally, they actually, each base camp has bathrooms that they bring. They okay. they trailer in bathrooms
like
for
a trailer,
us.
Porta potties mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's when you're
that's
there.
That's when you're at
night.
Base camp. If yeah. you're not at base camp,
then you just
pray that there's no photographers around you, and you just open the door to the Jeep.
Mm-hmm. Or you just see a lot of foods that keep you constipated.
Yeah. Well, those MREs are supposed to do that.
Yeah, exactly. No, you get quite used to driving up and all of a sudden seeing a bear butt somewhere. I mean, you there's just vehicles all over with.
Oh, yeah. Because you're all sort of doing the same thing in the same place. And
relatively so. There's different groups. Like, they separate the different teams into different groups. Mm. So not everybody's headed for the same checkpoints.
Oh, okay.
So that you don't copy people and just follow.
Okay. Right. Yeah. It's not just like follow the leader, but you are passing each other regularly and stuff. And so, yeah.
And there's some places where everybody has to go.
Right.
Is it mostly like desert terrain that you're in?
And sand dunes.
And sand.
Mm-hmm. Desert and sand, so mm-hmm. not a lot of tree cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much at all.
Huh.
There was one time last year where I was waiting for one of the film crews to pass us because I had to go so bad, and they had a drone up in the air, and I was
no.
just go. I have to go to the bathroom so bad.
That's funny.
But you just go.
You do. You get used to it. The first couple days, it's a little awkward, but then by day three, you're like, who cares? Like, I just got to get this out of me.
I just got to go so we can keep going.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you get to that point where you can't focus.
Yeah.
And then you just.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So you sure there's nothing we can talk about more about poop on that one?
Is there anything else you want to add?
Huh, let's see. Should we talk about consistency?
No. No, the question was, where do you poop?
No, where,
oh,
yeah.
okay.
Not what does it look
no,
like?
No, I don't want to get into the mechanics of it, although maybe that'd be for the second
I don't
series.
What's your audience part like? Two. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a whole series just on poop. Actually, what we'll probably, I think Harry Wagner's going to come back and we're going to do some recaps. Might do a whole section on
I was going to say, you could do a whole podcast and do snippets of each person, yeah. like, crop out each question of like this whole podcast is on poop.
Yes.
That would probably be and the where most popular podcast.
It probably will.
All right.
Everybody wants to.
Moving on. What recovery gear do you carry?
Well, we've got our Max Trax, which is probably our most helpful, most likely used. I've got a winch on the front. We've got toe straps. We've got shovels for digging out. Probably the bulk of it.
Have you used the Max Trax a bunch on this last year, maybe?
Well,
we were on the back of a trailer behind a U-Haul last
year. We were the one
year.
Being recovered last year. So, yeah, we didn't have any problems the first 3 days at all. And
right.
then we had the crash. And so at that point, yeah, we were the one being recovered. And we did, like say, continue on, but we never got in situations where we got stuck after that, fortunately. Yeah. So. Yeah, so we'll see this year.
We do know how to use them, though.
Right.
Yes.
We have
yes.
been to several trainings and have used them, so we know how to get ourselves out.
Right, so you've done. So, well, so happen. The my last, not last guess, 2 guests ago, Dan Strait was talking about the most important recovery item is just knowledge and education. Mm-hmm. And you guys have been doing a bunch of training.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So what have you been training on, and tell me a little bit about that process.
A lot of it with the Max Tracks, which is very helpful because that's a lot of the situations that we'll be in will be like that. We're not around like trees and big rocks and things like that.
We don't do a lot of rock crawling in it because we have to, I mean, for the most part, checkpoints and stuff aren't where, because they make this so that you can do it in a stock vehicle.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they have, it's made so that, you know, you can buy a car off or a vehicle off the showroom floor and go run this rally. So
the bulk of your problems are going to be in the sand, really, which is where Max Tracks are very helpful. We did get a demonstration at our last training of the Dead Man.
The Dead Man Off-Road.
Off-Road, yeah.
Oh, is that the sand anchor?
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we don't have one personally, but I know quite a few of the girls are bringing those with them, too. Yeah.
Or Bubba Ropes and those kind of things.
Have you done, you know, the trick where you bury a
tire.
Bury your tire.
Yes, yeah.
Which sounds like a good idea until you
realize you have to dig.
How much sand you have to move.
Yeah, exactly.
When they did the Dead Man thing, they actually were using the Max Tracks as like barriers. So they would dig, right. And then they were using the Max Tracks as walls
to hold the sand back.
So it wouldn't keep like filling in the hole.
Oh, I see.
But we've also done trainings just even in driving, not just in recovery, but we've done some, you know, navigation trainings and how to navigate in the dunes and how to drive in the dunes and how to.
Are those like organized events or do you hire some specific
the
service?
Most recent one we did was through the rally.
Okay.
And it was put on by Emily, who was the founder of the rally.
Okay.
And then we've done some others. One was put on by another girl who's part of the rally. Last year we did one through the Rod Hall Drive School, which is here in Reno.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did actually a couple classes with them. Yeah.
Cool. So the next question is onboard shower or lake, or is there a third option? Do they have a shower trailer?
There's a shower trailer.
Man, that is so fancy.
But I'm going to be completely honest. We took one last year.
Oh, because you had so much time at the repair.
Yes, and you're just so tired that you really just want to go to bed, even though a shower sounds amazing.
Right.
Your days are really long. I mean, you're getting up early. You're in the vehicle for about 12 hours or so. You get back. You're starving. You eat your amazing meal.
You have to set up camp.
You have to set up camp. And so usually by the time you've eaten, you're ready to go to bed. And like I said, you're getting us up. What time did we get up at?
Last year, we got woken up between 4:30 and 5 each day.
And I think they're saying they may be getting
and
us
it might
up
go earlier this year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
To get you all the way through so that everybody can make it to the next.
So everybody's allotted the same amount of time no matter when you start. So if you're off the line at 7 or if you're off the line at 8, you still have 12 hours.
Oh, I see. So they stagger the starts.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, almost all of them. One day there wasn't a staggered start. We were all given the same start. But
usually it's about every 2 minutes that you're going, just depending on the number of teams.
Cool. So you have a shower trailer.
Oh, and, yeah, back to that. Yes, we're given a shower trailer.
And I guess it's mostly desert, so it's not like you can sneak in a skinny dip at any point during the day because there aren't
no
any
water,
lakes.
Unfortunately.
Unless
you want to take a sand bath.
Well, and I mean, with some of the checkpoints, you only have so much time to get to them before they close out.
Oh.
And if they close out, you don't get any points the rest of the day if you don't make it by the designated time of those checkpoints closing. So you really, I mean,
there's not a time.
You can't spend a whole lot of time not doing something.
Right.
It's very intense. I mean, you know, it's not, and we can have up to 20 checkpoints in a day that we're looking for.
Huh.
And it's, so the green ones, the easiest ones, we have to get those. And you said, if they close out, you're done for the day if you don't make it. But the blue ones and the black ones, which are the intermediate and the advanced ones, they are optional. And so you kind of decide, and this is where strategy comes in, is to deciding, you know, which ones you're going to go for. Mm-hmm. And if ones, they're also based off of driving difficulty as well. So you kind of have to decide what your vehicle's capable of, what your driver is capable of, what your navigator is capable of, and make your decisions. And they've also designed it so that you can't get all those checkpoints within that amount of time.
Yeah.
So you have to make decisions of which ones you're going to go for.
And how long you're going to spend looking for them.
Yes.
Because like a blue checkpoint sounds great. Like you're going to be able to see it, but you're not going to be able to see it necessarily because it's not like it's on the side of the road. Like one time last year it was behind a building.
Okay.
So you're allowed to hike around the building, or sometimes it's like off behind a bush, like, but you're looking for a PVC pipe that's like 3 feet off the ground that's painted blue, or, you know, you're not, it's not going to be obvious. So you have to strategize your time also, because if you're just going to keep looking for a checkpoint and then the green closes an hour later and you can't get to it, or you can't find it, or you didn't realize how far you had to drive.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Then you're hosed.
You have to strategize.
And there's some mental part that goes into it too, because you do have other teams going and you don't know if they're looking for the same checkpoints right. you are or not. And even if they are, you don't know if they, you know, marked their coordinates wrong or, you know, you don't know if they're doing it right. So you have to, even if you see a bunch of people going one direction and you are just certain that you've got to go another direction, you have to stick with what you've decided right. and not let that sway right. you.
We learned that on day one last year.
Yeah.
Right.
Where we're like, all right, we're going to trust our instincts and we're going to trust each other and we're not going to let any other team influence what we do. Mm-hmm. And
good call.
Yeah. After
being lost for 3 hours, we did that.
The teams are all a single vehicle is a team.
It's a single vehicle and it's a driver and a navigator. Okay. Now you are allowed to switch roles right. and a lot of teams do.
But it's not like a team, it could be multiple vehicles.
No,
okay. no.
Mm-mm. That's going to influence the next question, which is what do you use for communication?
With each other or with other people? So
it's not 2 o'clock yet. Sorry, the guys are here to take over the podcast room. We got 10 minutes.
Okay.
That's more than enough time. So communication.
To communicate each other. So we just talk to each other. We have to wear helmets.
Turn your head.
Yeah. Or talk louder because we have to wear helmets.
Right.
And the Jeep's kind of noisy too. So
yeah.
But
we just got good at talking loud. But we can't communicate with other vehicles because we're not allowed cell phones. We're not allowed anything.
Oh, really?
We have a sat phone in our vehicle for emergency, and they have trackers on our vehicles. Okay. So the rally staff knows where we are, and they can get
and
in touch with us.
And the public can know where we are.
Yeah, they have online tracking, too. So public, if you go to rebelrally.com, at the start of the rally, you can actually log in and see where all the teams are, see what checkpoints they're supposed to be finding. And so they can know where we are, even if we don't know where we are.
And so you don't have cell phones, you don't have FRS radios.
Nothing.
You don't have CBs, nothing.
Nope. We can't use any of that.
So no communication.
Mm-mm. Nope. It's us two and a map and compass.
And so then, but you have a beacon, like if you do, if you were to drive off a sand dune, you would hit that.
So we have,
right?
There's a tracker on the vehicle, which is what you guys are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a handheld tracker that we have to punch in at every checkpoint.
Oh, I see.
And then we have a sat phone for emergencies only.
Okay.
So.
And we do have our cell phones with us, but they are in a box and it's taped up and everything. And we have to, every day at the end, we have to show them that we have not opened it up. But in a dire emergency, if for some reason the sat phone didn't work or whatever, if we needed to, we could get in there.
Interesting.
Yeah. But we're not, like, talking to the other teams.
No.
I mean, when we see them, we stop and talk or, you know, but, like,
we're
not.
We might
all
stop and poop together, but.
Right.
You can coordinate.
We'll make a little circle of the
vehicles. Is there, like, a button? You could put a button to poop.
Yeah.
You have to poop now.
Like, there's a light that goes off so people know not to walk around the corner.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there were times last year where we'd run across another team and we'd be like, okay, you know, is this what you guys have for this checkpoint or whatever? But for the most part, I mean, we're on our own.
Yeah.
Interesting. So there's not any like collaboration obstacles where you would have to like work with another team to find, or each team gets maybe a part of the obstacle. You're
on your own.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So this is probably the most important question. What do you
More
use for?
Poop.
Well, what do you use for navigation?
So we have maps and we have compasses and we have plotters.
What's a plotter?
I should have brought it. It's about a foot long and it's got a compass rose in the middle that can rotate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the like boaters used to use them.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's like a straight line and you put it down on top of the map.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can like line it up with your ladder long lines.
Right.
Uh-huh. And figure out the headings. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then we also have like map rulers because we're given maps of different scales.
They give you the maps.
They give us the maps.
Yeah, they do.
And then each day we're given the coordinates. So we're not given coordinates or anything ahead of time.
And the maps are each day in the mornings as well.
No.
The new maps for, we don't get all the maps at one time for the whole rally. Sure. Oh, we did. We just didn't open. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. I forgot. We did. We had to carry those around in the vehicle.
Yeah, we had. So day one, we got all like 17 maps.
Oh, wow.
And they're
right.
huge. They're like
out.
3x4.
Huh.
So we had to carry them around. And we were responsible
for them. What are
they? Just
regular USGS maps?
They are. But they're different scales. So some of them are 1 to 50,000. Some are 1 to 100. Some are 1 to 200,000.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
And we also, another section of it that they do is TSDs, time, speed, distance, which is where you have to maintain an average speed for a certain distance. And then you are given points based off of how closely you stay to that. Like they have different timing segments and, you know, within, if you're like within 3 seconds, you get so many points like that. So, we have some time, little stopwatch type timer things and stuff to try to track that.
Cool. So when you're given coordinates, you're given it in lat long?
Correct.
And you plot that with the straight edge off the grid on the edge of the map. Is that right?
Yeah, there's coordinates that are like across the line. Like
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So you just plot it off the map and then orient the map properly and are you following roads generally or
yes,
landmarks?
For the most both.
Yeah,
I mean, for the most part. So
except
when we're
for
navigating,
open OHV areas, the sand dunes are kind of random.
We have to stay on.
We have to be. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We have to stay on designated roads.
Okay.
We can't just. I mean, tread lightly. Like we have to be able to leave no trace in that. So we're not just plowing through anywhere. We have to. Once we plot a coordinate, we then have to figure out how to get there.
Right. And the roads are on the map, so it's not like you
sometimes.
Have to...
In theory. In theory, yes.
But that can be actually part of the challenge sometimes, is if, you know, the map is a little bit older or whatever, you can get somewhere and all of a sudden those roads aren't there, and then you have to refigure how you're going to get over there.
I guess the interesting thing there is that there's no little blinking arrow on your paper map showing you where you're in relation
to
most.
I mean, and you can sometimes look at a map and there's two roads side by side and eventually one's going to veer off to the right and eventually one's going to veer off to the left. But when you're looking at the two of them.
If one's not there anymore.
Well, yeah, or if one's not there or you come to a spot where there are two and it's not on your map and then you have to take a heading or, you know, have to figure out which direction that road is going or this road's going to see which, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which way you're ultimately supposed to go. So there's a lot of strategy and such.
Cool. And I guess it's going to be different things this time, different areas. So it's not like you're going to be able to remember.
Correct.
Right.
From
we have
year.
No idea because we don't even know where the start line is. We don't find that out.
Or the finish. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, we don't know
finish,
anything.
Yeah, nothing.
Just generally. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Some of the excitement of it is we don't know.
It's a lot, you know. It's a lot simpler than, more complicated. I mean, you know, following a GPS track on a coordinate is, you know, on some of these more well-known routes like, you know, Mojave Road or something. I mean, you just follow the purple line.
Right.
So it's not really that much of a challenge anymore.
Right.
Cool. Well, so the last question is what non-driving activities do you do on your overlanding trips? Is there any, obviously you're not stopping and doing any hiking, but... there's singing, joke telling, listen to podcasts.
There's a lot of joke telling.
A lot of joke telling.
It kind of keeps us sane. Uh-huh. We kind of have jokes between us that just kind of help lighten the mood or and then we also have a safe word to like, you know, if one of us gets to that point where like, okay, just give me a minute.
Uh-huh. Which it might be the ejector seat switch.
It might
this
be
year.
The ejector suite switch. But I mean,
there's not a lot of time for us, so it's mostly the time that we're in the
business.
It is, but but like I said, we keep it light though. We really do try to keep a lot of humor between. Luckily, we have a very similar humor how we joke about things, which has helped a lot. And I think it's why our as a team we've remained really close. Last year, some of the teams didn't do so well together. I mean, honestly, one of the biggest challenges of the thing is the relational part too, because you're with your teammate constantly for all those days. So some of the teams had a rougher time, and we, even though all that we went through, we stuck together really well and wanted to come back together again this year. So.
And I think a lot of it for us is we have the similar goals.
Yeah.
Like, we're not here to be first place necessarily.
Right.
I mean, it'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome.
But you know, there's so much pressure with that. And we're here to have a good time. We're here to learn. We're here to do our best. We're here to, like, strengthen each other and help each other and teach each other and, you know... And a lot of that makes a difference in our attitude towards each other, too, because, you know, when you're there to only win or only do this or, don't, you know.
Yeah, it changes the whole. If your whole goal is only to win, then it really changes the focus and puts a whole different stress level on the whole thing. So
awesome. Well, we got to clear out the room here. But
So we can follow your adventure, Instagram, Sugar High Motorsports, YouTube, Sugar High Motorsports, Facebook, Sugar High Motorsports, and you are Four Wheelin' Mom on Instagram.
Correct.
And
I'm Michelle_B_Davis on Instagram.
Awesome.
And we are Team 126.
Team 126. So yeah, I will post the link. I'm going
to... RebelRally.com.
Okay. Yeah. This will go live tomorrow, which is going to be today. When I post it. No, I'll post it Thursday. So it'll go live when you guys are starting, hopefully.
Awesome.
Okay, cool.
And so we'll be able to follow along. Cool?
Awesome. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Thank
All right, thanks
so
for
much.
Coming in. If you have questions or comments for me or my guest, please post a comment on the show notes on our website, allterrainpodcast.com, where you'll find any links mentioned in the show, as well as videos, trip reports, and more. You can also find us on Instagram at allterrainpodcast. All Terrain Podcast was created by me, Mike Henderson. Special thanks to Chris Webster of the Archaeology Podcast Network and Colin Loretz of the Overwatch Hero Podcast. All Terrain Podcast is recorded at Reno Collective, a co-working community in Reno, Nevada. Learn more at renocollective.com.